Welcome back, everybody, to The Slow Pitch. And I see Lane, and I see also Veronica. So, everybody, let's say hi to Lane first. Lane, how are you doing?
Fantastic, Rob. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. And Veronica is joining us today. Veronica, how are you doing?
I'm even doing better than Lane. Step it up, man.
Oh, wow.
What's better than fantastic?
Marvelous.
So before we get too far, let's find out what Veronica does and why she's joining us.
And why she's so feisty.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Veronica Rami. Nice to meet all your listeners. I am a dream team architect. I basically help people architect their teams in order for them to scale from seven figures to eight. And I also have a program called the Rainmaker Residency, which is specifically designed to develop and train marketing leaders so that my CEOs don't have to be the marketer for their own companies anymore.
Wait, so CEOs shouldn't be doing the marketing? Is that what you're saying?
At some point, you need to let it go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, So let's dive into this. So I think, Lane, do you understand who we're talking to here? This is like a big deal.
This is huge. This is huge. Yeah.
This is very huge. Yeah. I don't know if everybody understands how big of a deal this is that we got Veronica on our show. I can't believe this. All right. So, Veronica, one of the things that you and I had spoken about a little while back was the importance of a team that works together and functions as one to support each other. Do you remember that conversation a little bit?
I plead the fifth. Oh, wait, sorry.
All right.
Meeting.
So, wrong meeting. Yeah. Good call.
Too
yes.
Soon.
So too soon. Can you give us a little bit of understanding why we had that conversation and what we were talking about?
Yeah. So Rob and I have known each other for a while now, and we have had conversations because, you know, marketing and sales. So like when I think about the people that I train, their job is to oversee the content production, the marketing promotions and launches, but also the sales activity, because everything centers around converting that prospect into a customer for the first time. And I want people to play nice. And so oftentimes, if you have a sales team that's separated from the marketers, that's separated from anybody, like there tends to be some tension between these players. And I think that's silly, but it happens all the time. And that can happen in a corporate environment, or it can happen even amongst entrepreneur-led businesses, so to speak. So we can talk about that.
So size companies that you typically deal with, just so we're on the same page, what does that look like?
I mostly work with online entrepreneurs at this point, and they are usually 70, 80,000 gross revenue a month, all the way up to 200, 300,000, if not more a month. So yeah, we're in the millions range for sure.
Yeah. And that's about the right range for people that are business owners that have got to start to let stuff go and are like, I can't let that go. I'm really good at that. So how do you get people to recognize, hey, I need to let go?
They've already recognized it. I literally was talking to a colleague of ours, Donald Kelly, who's has a great podcast as well. But
he's coming up, by the way, in
another
podcast.
And I asked him kind of the same question. I'm like, when was the time for you to expand your team? He's like, because I was burned the freak out. So it's not so much they're like, I'm ready. I'm frolicking through sunflowers. I'm ready to let go. No, it's because they are so crispy. They're so burnt out. And they're like, either I bring people to this party to like dump on, or I'm going to be dumping the business. It can get that bad, that dark pretty quickly.
If they're at that point, it's pretty simple to just say, hey, you need to let this go and let me take it over. Okay. And what's the pain that they're having, if you will, like if you're going through this process, the pain that they're having is
they have a real company that has real problems and they're the only firefighter on site. Like they're literally the only one playing whack-a-mole, and the whack-a-mole game is 24/7, Monday through Sunday. And it's like, they just need somebody else to do the strategic thinking. The decision fatigue is out of control. They're just tired. Tired doing everything. I'm tired of being the dancing monkey that has to sell the thing. And then I have to fulfill the thing. Then I have to count the money. Like they're just everywhere doing all the things and they're tired.
Okay. So if you're in the room and you're getting ready to sell somebody and you know that these are the things, what questions, just for the sales side, what questions do you ask to get that information out of them?
I mean, most of the time, the rooms that I'm in, number one, let's start with like being in the right room. So it's not hard when you're in mastermind settings or networking groups or networking opportunities where you'll start to hear that dialogue. In my particular industry, it is very launch heavy and launch centric. There's a lot of launching. And so I will often hear my CEOs complain, lament about either the launch not performing well or the launch burnout, or the fact that they caught the fact that their sales page URL was broken 2 hours after the cart opened on their webinar. Like, it's nuts. You'll hear a lot of crazy stories like that.
Interesting. Okay. And so the more stories that they tell you like that, do you get into the numbers of how is that impacting numbers wise or?
Yeah, it's interesting how intimidating the numbers are for a lot of entrepreneurs that don't come from a more corporate background where we just talk all the time. We talk about budgets, which I mean, it's just constant. It's kind of annoying, right? But all entrepreneurs, they don't really talk about their numbers because it's probably the most naked they can be is to disclose their lifestyle business numbers. And they're not going to do that, or they very rarely do that with anybody in the organization, period. So it's not so much that they're talking about. What I know right away, though, is team turnover. They're like, oh, I've hired a marketer. How many have you gone through in the last 12 months? Well, like three. I'm like, oh. So we'll talk about team turnover. We'll talk about turnover rate. That's something that you'll hear often. And then we'll talk about like, okay, how did that set you back? Or what thing have you been wanting to do that you haven't been able to do? So they'll process the bleed in aspiration not met more than financial consequences in a number format.
That's interesting. So it's different then. So, all right.
Does that make sense?
Before we get, I think so. But when you get too far, I don't want to get too far into the sales process because to me, that's, you know, we talk about that a lot on the show of like, how do you get into those pain questions to understand how much is this costing you? Like, is this costing them time? Is this costing them money? So you recognize that because you've had conversations with enough people and you dig in, you start finding that information out. Once you have that information, are there packages? Are there things that you go through to say, here's some of the options that you have in terms of what you can do for them, right?
I know what you're saying too, because like I've done Sandler's training and I've done the science of selling and like there's tons of really great sales models, and my husband's in corporate sales. So he's always talking about RGAs and this and that, all these acronyms. I'm like, all right, buddy, calm down. Yeah. But like ultimately what you're trying to assess is like, you know, how big is the carrot of their aspiration? How painful is the stick that is hitting them in the process? Like those are usually where I go in a really simplistic way. Like, how far is your ambition telling you to go? And how bad is the frustration that you're not there yet? That's usually what it is. It's like they as a visionary, like, I know this company. We haven't even started cold ads. Can you imagine when we really turn on the fire hydrant? We haven't even started. Like, you'll hear a lot of that language. Like, we got to this hockey stick level of success just by word of mouth or just by my social media presence. Like, can you imagine when we actually try? Then they actually try by having people around them and it doesn't go well. The execution is poorly done. They're like, that's the dialogue that I tend to have. And then when I kind of come in, it's like baby steps here. And Dave Ramsey talks about this too in his, like, I think there was like a podcast I was listening to about like the financial, what does he call it? Financial Peace University, where he talks about like one of the first big steps in his 7-part process or whatever is like, just save $1,000. Now he's working with people that have like hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. But like the first step is just like, can we put $1,000 in a savings account in your bank? I kind of approach, even when I think about my value ladder of offers or services myself, I kind of do the same thing. So like at the most basic or entry level spot with me, it's just an hour, literally an hour. Like, and before we think about a day together or an entire quarter together or an entire 12-month program together, let's just talk about an hour together. And we are very definitive. Like, what do you want to get out of the hour? And for some of them, it's like, well, I just want to know if the org chart that I had is crap. I'm like, okay, for an hour, I'm going to tell you whether or not this org chart is crap and who's missing and who I would be hiring or firing first or next, right?
Yep.
So like they'll have like a really specific thing. We're like, can you just look under the hood? And it's almost like, can you just give me a quick win? Like, yeah, I can give you a quick win. And then, so then I give them that insight and they're like, oh my gosh. And then some of them are empowered and they can go execute that by themselves. Some of them are like, there's no way in hell I'm going to be able to do this by myself. Can you help me further? And then you keep going in that way, but you got to give them a quick win. You got to give them a little truffle on the pillow.
Yeah. All right. Let's dig into.
Please dig.
Let's dig into the process of getting people to understand how to make their business function as a team. All silos are gone, and that functions work with functions work with functions naturally? How do we do that?
Well, as a mother of two children, it starts with me. Right? So same thing. It's really interesting whether you're talking about even from a parenting standpoint in your personal home, or you're thinking about it from a team perspective, not that your employees are your children, but kind of like you are responsible for their well-being. You are also responsible for their output and success and course correction, just like you would be at home. So for me, whether I have a little siloed off content team, I have a little siloed, you know, sales function, or I have a little siloed off like marketing kind of promotion team, you know, it really starts with me and very intentional, tactical, tangible efforts to bring people on the same page. And that usually starts with like, hey, friends, I know it's been like this before, but I'm going to introduce you to the 2.0 version that we're embracing for the next 6 months to 12 months. Can I invite you to partake of this new flavor, this new vision that we have for our team? Or if it's for the whole company, it could be a whole 2.0 version, initiative for the company.
Is there a fight or a pushback from the people that are working there?
Oh, yeah.
What is that like? Yeah. How do you get past that?
When you can work with anybody, you literally talk to anybody, whether it's the Michael Hyatts or any of these kind of coaches that work with business owners, when you come in to initiate a new objective or a new wave where things are getting tightened or things are being like any of that change management that starts to come in, you can almost predict that you're going to lose one to two people almost every time. And it's a process. And I hate to say it, but like, if you look at the stats, it's guaranteed that people will self-eject. There are the people that have grown accustomed to this level of output. And so when you're like, well, we need to double our output, they're like, no, I like this complacency level just fine, you know? And so when the whole team starts running a 4 minute mile, unfortunately, the people that can only run 5 minutes or 6 minute miles, just they will naturally self-eject. So there is always that tension or early loss of people that are just not bought into the new way of being. And then what's really exciting, where I get more, I don't get deflated by that, because I sometimes I'll even like set them up on a different path. Like, hey, I see your talent and it's not going to be for this 2.0 version, but I think you could actually be a really great fit here. So if I can build a bridge for them elsewhere, I try to do that in goodwill. But what I get really excited about is the A players who know that they've been operating under their potential. So then when you come in, you're like, listen, peeps, we're going to run faster. Like, hell yeah, I've been waiting this whole time. That's the people that I get real excited for, because they've been itching, they're ready, they know that they've been underutilized this whole time.
Yeah. And I like how you call it self-eject. I like to call them transition them to be a client, but whichever way you like it doesn't matter to me. I like it. But that is the way that it is. You have that structure of people. And I know, you know, GE has a process and all these different companies. There's all these out there, right? Before I go too far, I should ask what questions Lane might have, because he's always a thousand questions.
Oh, goodness. So you talked about these founders or entrepreneurs or whatever we want to call them. Mm-hmm. They've tried working with, you know, they've tried bringing other people to work for them in the past. It hasn't worked out. What tends to be the biggest reason why that has not worked for them?
Number one, they're inviting people to the party too late, meaning they themselves are not in a good place mentally. They're burnt out. They're impatient. They're tired. Have you ever had a dialogue with your spouse when you're burnt out and tired at the end of the day? It's usually not a good idea, right? So same idea. So like, they're usually bringing people on, but by the time the pain is really great, not only do the people come and they're not getting the best version of the leader, and that's just what happens. Then on top of that, the leader goes, oh, finally. And then they dump. They don't pace it. And they don't also then onboard or define the success criteria. They're like, you're in charge of emails now. Okay, what does that mean? Like, I have tactical skills. I know how to push send and I know how to write words. But what's your form of emailing? What do you think subjectively is a good email? Like, everybody has a different preference. You're talking about design. Well, I like abstract. Well, I don't like abstract. I like, you know, like a fancy toilet that's worth $50,000. What? Right? Like, so everybody has their preferences, but unfortunately these founders, especially if they are the primary marketer and they're the ones that have defined the brand voice, they haven't taken the time to then put that on a piece of paper that makes sense to anybody else besides them, but they expect that person to read their mind or to figure it out on their own. And it doesn't happen very well. Even some of the best candidates get hired get turned out because they haven't been set up for success.
That's interesting. Okay. I would have, just me thinking, I would have thought it would be more, they just have a hard time letting go of something they've been working with.
Oh, no. They let go too fast, too soon, okay. Too ferociously.
Interesting.
Fast and furious.
All right. The other question, another question that I have is, transitioning a team is one thing. As a sales manager who's got to manage a group of people to fit in with this new process in this new way, which then also integrates marketing and all the other components, mm-hmm. How do you get that manager to make that change? Mm-hmm. Because that's really where the stopper would be, right? That's where you're going to run into problems more than anything.
Yeah, and sales teams in particular, I mean, think about the nature of a person to even be on a sales team. Like, these are naturally competitive people. They are incentivized by comp plans. That not every personality in the world is incentivized by carrots. Some people are not. Some people are trying to avoid pain at all costs and just want consistency and something and stability. Salespeople are like, nope, I want no ceiling to my compensation. If I'm hungry, I want to chase after it. Like, they are entrepreneurial in spirit, but you're trying to like channel that passion energy on behalf of the organization as one of those entrepreneurs. So not to play politics, but yes, you almost, for me, when I know that I'm getting on a team that has lots of personality, like that's really what you're talking about. You have big personalities, yes. Big players, A players. They know themselves to be A players. They wouldn't be successful in sales if there wasn't a strong sense of ego, which right. Then the negative side can be the pride. So what I try to do is I try to convert them one by one. So it is very common for me to have very quickly, even before I communicate the new vision to all, I will actually do kind of what politicians do, where you'll have the meeting with just a senator at lunch. Can I count on your vote? And then you go to like the House of Representatives and then you go to the main floor. I do the same thing, yeah. Where I will go and connect emotionally with big personalities. I accept them for who they are. My job is not to change you from the narcissist that you are. That was on your parents, not me. Right. I accept them for who they are, and my job is just to work with them. Now, do I have any tolerance for them becoming locker room lawyers and trying to poison the well? I don't have tolerance for that.
Right.
So if I can identify somebody who is toxic and who is going to taint the well, then no, we're not going to have tolerance for that. But I will very much try to sit with them individually one by one so they get to know me. I'm not a threat. I succeed when you succeed. What do you need to be successful? Oh, really? This is what I need to be successful. Can we both agree? Great, shake. And then present it to the team so that you have some internal champions for you first. So same thing when you're selling an external client, you try to get your internal champion with them. It's the same concept, but you do amongst the team that's already established.
Yeah, and I was going to actually, once you were done describing that scenario, I was actually just going to say, this is the exact same thing as when you're selling and you know you have an advocate on the inside.
Champion.
And you pull them aside and you get, what do I need to do? What's this person like? You start to find out, okay, this person that really is going to make the decision, what kind of personality do they have? Are they very direct? Are they high level? Are they low level? They want the details. All that information, you can start to gather that and they will tell you because they want it just as bad as anybody else. Versus somebody that's against you, you got to find those people too, right? And find out, well, why are you against me here?
And that's happened to me before, where I came onto a team and I was the new externally hired director. And what I learned very quickly when they hired me is like, oh yeah, and by the way, this guy who is now your direct report, yeah, he actually applied for your job and we chose you over him. So that might present an issue. I'm like, oh.
You think?
So it happens. It happens. And I was grateful that HR had given me that heads up. Sometimes we don't get the heads up. I think that puts a manager in to look stupid position. Yeah. But it's going to happen. You're going to have big personalities. There's going to be people that wanted your job. Like, that's all part of the game. The biggest thing that I can say, and I try, and like, this is like a rule that I apply in my romantic personal relationships as well as my professionals, focus on feelings, not behaviors. So if you can just connect with somebody on their feelings and how they feel and what they want and what they aspire for and what's standing in their way, and then they see you as an advocate to help them get those roadblocks out of the way, they tend to be a little bit softer with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Lane's tried to tell me that a lot too. And he's always talking about his feelings with me. And
Rob just doesn't listen. He's not a good listener.
He's like, your behavior sucks. He's like, but I was feeling, I don't care about your feelings.
Yeah, pretty much. Lane, what other questions do you have?
I think he's scared of me.
Let me ask this. Terrified.
Well, I have a question for Lane actually this time. Lane, I want you to guess what disc profile Veronica has.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, no.
Do you need some time? Because we'll continue the interview a little longer, mm-hmm. and then we'll get into answering that
question. Do you take into account my Cuban heritage, or...
Oh, gosh. definitely not a C. Definitely not a C.
No. No, you're correct.
I don't think you're an S either. I don't know. Process of elimination. I'm going to go with the D.
That would be my guess as well.
But a self-aware D. Hold on. Hold on. Because, you know, I'm an Enneagram 8. I'm a high achiever, Myers-Briggs. I've taken all the assessments, and I know what I am. Yeah. But I would like to add the asterisk that I'm a very self-aware, balanced, healthy D.
I would say I don't know a single D that's not self-aware, mm-hmm. but balanced is never in the equation.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, if they're a high D and they're not anything else, and I know you have other traits, I know you do, but if you have a very high D and that's really their only trait, there's no balance. It's like my way or the highway.
Remember
right?
when we were in BNI together? Yep.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I do remember. Yes. All right. So back to just some of the things about teams and so forth. When you're dealing with a sales team and you have high performers and low performers, obviously you're going to try to get rid of the low performers, or is there another process to it? Because I know that's part of the whole, it's managing people. It's leading people. It's doing all the right functional things that you should be doing as a leader. What do you do to identify those besides the fact that they're not selling as much mm-hmm. as everybody else? Yeah. How do you identify what their issue is and where they need to come along to be able to stay on board?
Yeah. So I, you saw me like shake my head really. I believe that good leaders should be helping their people to do self-evaluations. If I'm bringing something to your attention that you didn't realize about yourself, I have failed as a true leader in my personal definition. What I mean by that is, like, for example, let's say I'm doing a employee one-on-one, right? So we're doing regular one-on-ones. You're not finding out that you suck in the annual performance review when you don't get your bonus. That's not good. But let's say we're doing one-on-ones and we plan them either every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks of a cadence. I always have the team member do an assessment first. So they start the conversation by saying, here, this is what I'm doing well in. This is what I'm not doing well or could be doing better in. And this is what I need to be more successful. Then and only then will I, then a manager, say the same thing. Well, this is what I think you're succeeding in. So I'll either validate what they said or I'll add to the pile. This is where I also too see that you need area of improvement. So I will confirm and validate what they've done in their own self-assessment, or I will add to. And then I will either commit, right, to the thing that they need, that they're asking for help, or I will challenge it to say, I'm like, I don't think that's what's actually going to help you. I think there are other obstacles that we're not being honest about. Would you permit the Dale Carnegie? Can I have your permission to share my honest feelings? So I'm having these conversations on a frequent basis. So there should never be a point where somebody doesn't know that they're performing. My preference would be to have somebody self-eject before I have to eject them for them. That's better for the company on a whole bunch of levels, but it's also better for the employee to be like, yeah, I'm not doing the best that I can. And I would like to, and then usually there's a conversation like, I think you and I both know this isn't fitting, but how much do you want to coast on this? Or do you want me to help you find a different place?
Yeah.
That's usually the level of conversations I'm having.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of the name of the book. I think it's something like Fierce Conversations. Mm-hmm. Have you ever read that book?
No, but I think I live it, right?
Sounds like you pretty much live that, because it's having that conversation that's difficult to have with somebody that's not performing, but it's also having a realistic conversation with somebody that you're working with that is not on the same page as you, and being able to have a very meaningful conversation, a productive conversation, but one that doesn't, it doesn't go down to like name calling and I'm not talking to you again, right? It's matter of fact. This is the way this is, and what are we going to do about it? And let's work through this together. And I think that kind of conversation as a sales leader is really important. I think the follow-up would be, how do you identify when somebody is lagging? Because somebody can be lagging, but still getting the sale, right? So they can still get sales, but they're not there where they really should be, whether it's soft skills or other skills. How do you identify that, and what do you do?
Well, Well, I think there's multiple ways of growth. I mean, there, for example, there's salespeople that should never be a people manager. I'll be real honest with you. Like, you should never. You should not be responsible for other humans. You're barely responsible for yourself. There, and I say that lovingly, but it's true. Like, there is more than one way for you to be successful or have advancement that is not just straight into people management. There is, especially in sales, you can be an individual contributor for a really long time, making really good money and having less headache. Let's be very clear. Other people could actually be really not the top performer in individual contribution. Like, they're not the top sales guy. But if you put them in a function to like nurture and cultivate and grow other people, they thrive.
Yep.
And I think your job is to see who's good at what. Some people are good at just dropping those threes, right? And then other people are actually really good at like motivating the troops when we're down and we're having a bad quarter. And I think there's place for everyone.
For any sales leaders that are listening, those are the critical components that, you know, but if you're a salesperson and you're on a team and you're not sure where you sit, you should ask and find out, right? I mean, I think there's nothing better from somebody that's employed by another company and saying, well, where am I sitting compared to everybody else? There's nothing wrong with that. I know it's kind of a weird question.
No. I'm laughing because I remember my last big corporate stop before entrepreneurship for myself. I worked at a company called Entrada, and I remember going to the COO, who was my manager, John. I'm like, John, you have a whole bunch of directors. And I was a director. There's like seven of us on the team or something. I'm like, rank us. Who's number one? He's like, are you serious? I'm like, oh, I'm dead serious. And he did. And I wasn't number one. And I was like, oh, hold on. And I grabbed my piece of paper and my pen. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna shut up. You tell me why I'm not number one. You tell me right now why I'm not number one. And I like wrote all the things as to why I wasn't number one. Like, all right, I'll talk to you in 6 months. So like, but that's what I'm saying. But that's my, as you identify a D, like I'm a certain personality and I wanted to know where I stacked up. I think, you know, that's one way of doing it. I think you can flip it. You're the leader. Like, hey, we have a big team. And it's clear by where everybody's numbers are, where you guys rank. But would you like me to tell you where I think you rank in a different capacity, in a leadership capacity or in a team component capacity? Like, I think you can have that dialogue and invite them to it. Some people will take it well, like I did, and write all the things to like prove them wrong.
Definitely.
And then somebody else will be like, that just crushed my soul. You know, it just depends.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other thing to know, if you're on a team and you're an employee or an hourly or just somebody that's like, I don't care what, if you fit into a team in any way, shape or form, you have to think of yourself and say, all right, what are the expectations of the company?
Yes.
And then that line, if you just follow that, like if that was a line of expectations or standards or whatever, that line, whatever line that is, you may perform above or below that. But then over time, that line can shift up or down. Their standards could go up and you won't even know it. And suddenly you're below it. And that's why it's really important to ask those questions. Because if you don't ask, you won't know, hey, I'm short of what's expected here without realizing it. And listen, if they come back and sit down with you like you do, Veronica, where you'll sit down with somebody and say, okay, here's the new standard. That's what you would do. Because that's how you would do it.
Yeah.
But a lot of companies and a lot of business owners won't do that because it's an uncomfortable conversation and it shouldn't be, but it is.
Yeah. There's another great book that is called Crucial Conversations. That's another like corporate classic where people like, how do you have a crucial conversation? How can you be forthright? And that's the thing about being a leader. You have to be forthright and diplomatic, but you also have to be stern and have course correction conversations if needed, you know, necessary. But I think on a really fundamental level, regardless of where you are in a company, whether you're just starting out and you're in, you know, at the bottom or you're at the very top or regardless of what, you know, level you find yourself to be in an organization, I think fundamentally everybody really wants to feel psychologically safe in their place of employment. And part of feeling safe is just knowing where the lines of your playground are.
Yep.
And I never really understood that until I came back from my maternity leave. So I had a whole male team and I was pregnant and I was going on maternity leave. And so I hired this manager to like kind of run, hold space for everybody and like just be the manager while I was gone for 8 weeks. And when I came back, way too fast, but when I came back, I remember my employee, Patrick, he's like, I'm so glad you're back. I'm like, oh yeah, why? Like, you love me? He's like, hold on, no. He was like, because with you, I know where I stand. And this is what he said word for word. I know the walls of my playground. And I had never heard that before. And he does not have kids. So I was like, what in the world are you saying to me? Yeah. But it was because the manager that I had put in my absence was more of a buddies manager. Like, we're buddies, you know, like we're just, you know, it's that friendly manager type, the, you know, Steve Carell, whatever, what's his name?
Yeah.
Michael Scott kind. And not that I wasn't friendly and I wasn't kind and charming and all the things that I'm sure you've gathered from this podcast, but I was also just clear and I was transparent, and I had when course changes or correction needed to happen. And so that was something that he was commenting with you. I know where I stand and I like that. And I was like, wow, yeah. Fascinating.
I feel like that's honestly the number one thing any employee wants.
Yeah.
Is yeah, totally. To know where they stand. Yeah, right? I mean, why wouldn't you want to know where you stand? And it's the same in any relationship. I mean, that's at home, that's in work. That's, it doesn't really matter. You want to know. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's even if you are insecure or not insecure, it doesn't matter. You kind of want to know that, and that's always helpful. So, Veronica, if somebody after listening to this said, I wish I could talk to Veronica because she knows how to do this and I don't know how to do this. Sure. How would they get a hold of you?
People aren't scared of me at this point. No, I'm just kidding. I promise you, I'm very lovely. It's like Friday afternoon. I'm just a little sassy, right? It's the end of the day, the work week. And I also just love Rob to pieces. And he knows, and I can do this with Rob. I can just kind of like, you know. Anyways.
Make my editing difficult. I know.
Yes. But I am everywhere as myself. So you can find me on veronicaromney.com or on social media. I am V Romney. And most people call me V. So there you go.
Veronica, I appreciate you coming on the show. It's the insights that you brought, which I felt like are outside of what we normally talk about. And the reason I wanted you to come on was because you have a broader picture of it's not just sales. Sales is one component. Mm-hmm. So if you're a salesperson listening, you're one component of a bigger cog that makes the business go. Yeah. If you're selling for yourself, that's a different issue, but it's still one component. And how you manage a business, how sales affects the business, and how the business manages and affects sales, it all goes hand in hand. And so you have to understand, if you feel like as a salesperson, I don't like where I'm working because of X, Y, and Z in this business, something's not quite right. Maybe Veronica can help, but this is one of those situations where you have to understand you're part of a bigger process. Mm-hmm. And so maybe asking some questions that say, okay, why are we doing it that mm-hmm. way? And start to figure out and problem solve with the business owners or other managers or whatever you need to do. Mm-hmm. That's why I really wanted you to come on. So I appreciate you coming on. Thank you for your time. All right. Well, everybody, till next time, don't forget to slow down and close more. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to The Slow Pitch. Do you have a question about sales? Call or text your question at 608-708-SLOW. That's 608-708-7569. Or you can email them to questions@theslowpitch.com. Slow down and close more.
Thanks as always for listening today. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. We really appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Slow Pitch. We were mixed today, as always, by Johnny Polakis, and we were produced by High Gravity Studios. Music credits and other notes are in the show notes section on theslowpitch.com, and we'll be back with another episode soon.